Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Off, as they say in recording circles. So welcome to a very glitterati and exciting day, auspicious day was what I was trying to say, in the Good Listening To Show clearing. This is a very special Brandstrand founder story episode where we are welcoming Mr. John Philp, who is facilitator glitterati. He is the founder and managing director of Croft Consultancy Training and Development, and you've been on the open road of being a driving force in leadership and management development for over 30 years. And yeah, we've got history, John Philp, in that we've known each other for many, many years too. So this is a regathering of the clan in the clearing.
Absolutely. Yeah. 25 plus years, I think. Yeah. We were both gainfully employed with a wonderful mutual organisation, namely the Oxford Group.
Yes, indeed.
And we did some fantastic work together. And it was in those early days that I found this wonderful young man who was an actor, who brought many of the sort of key lessons and training aspects to life in a way that I'd never seen before. As a role player, role playing is one thing, but doing it properly. And Chris, ever since then, I've held you in very high esteem.
Thank you so much, John. And to blow some extra happy smoke back at you in positioning you today, and I'm delighted to be reconnected, you've been given one of the finest accolades I've ever read, actually, by a mutual friend, a contact particularly of yours called Stan Slapp. I love that name, by the way. My comic hero of all time is Stan Laurel. So Stan Slapp made me think of Slapstick, but it's just a great name. Plus, I've got a son called Stan. What can you do? Anyway, back to you. He describes you as being the finest facilitator he's ever witnessed. And that's high praise indeed coming for the echelons in which he operates too. And the ingredients that make you, John Philp, so unusually effective are your rare command and presence in a room. Nothing gets by you. It's behind you, and there's no place for anyone to hide. So high praise indeed. You're extremely welcome to the Good Listening To Show clearing, John.
Pleasure, thank you.
So how's morale? What's your story of the day? I know it was your birthday yesterday, so happy birthday.
Wow, thank you so much. Yes, I don't know. I mean, it's remarkable. The older I get, the less competent sometimes I feel about life. One suggests that the older you get, the more comfortable you feel. I just see all of this technology and wonderful progress that's happening around me. And I remember a time in my life when I could influence my children and help them with their technology. And now I am the dad that says, help, you know. So, life is good. Life is very, very good. Thank you.
And I love that. That's incredibly relatable. The head of IT in every family is normally about four.
Yeah. If you need something done, find a 14-year-old, you know.
And my children, I've got 23 and 17. They're always slapping their forehead saying, old people and technology, don't even go there. But we're doing very well because here we are doing a LinkedIn Live in homage to all things Croft Consultancy Training and Development. So quick, deliberately clunky question for you, first of all. We've all been there at networking events when people go, oh, what do you do? We hate that question. But what's your favourite way of describing what you do, either avoiding or answering that question, John?
Fantastic. You know, it's a great thing. Well, can I just caveat that with a couple of things? That question, what do? Is always asked of us by people who don't really know us. The people who do really know us would never say, what do you do? They'll say, what did you do today?
Yes.
And if you cannot answer that question, what do you do or what did you do today, with a level of authentic pride and emotion and happiness, then you're probably in the wrong job. So what do I do? I support major organizations to develop their people. And I do that in a way that brings out the best of them. And I do that in a way that brings out an authentic commitment. And I do that in a way that has a lot of fun. And we get results and we get asked back. And so therefore, what do? I actually have a lot of fun and I get paid for it. Thank you.
And you've been to all sorts of international sorties, including delivering training in a tent within the Iraqi desert. You've been very much a Middle Eastern advocate for so long as well. And I know there's been, I mean, it's 77 countries, I remember searching, that you've actually facilitated in.
Right. In terms of the Middle East work, it all started back in 2001, literally 2 days after 9/11. And I got a call from this gentleman, and I won't say any names, you know, just to protect the innocent. But I remember getting this call and thinking, I know who this is. This is a good friend of mine. I believe his name was Kenny, Kenny Hogg, who was one of my best men, but that's another story. And all I could hear was this really, really ridiculous accent saying, "Hello, are you Mr. John?" And I said, "Yes, I am." I said, "Mr. John, I believe you're a good trainer." I said, "I'm a very good trainer." He said, "No, I'm very, very good." And this conversation went back and forward for about a minute or so until I realized it wasn't my good friend, but it was in actual fact a legitimate, bona fide Middle Eastern businessman who has training programs to run, and he'd been let down badly by his American associate colleagues. And cut a long story short, within 36 hours, I was on a flight out to Dubai, and the rest of the Middle Eastern story is almost history.
Wow. What a great sort of inception of that journey and that path, because it lasted many, many years, almost becoming a Middle Eastern specialist. You were a CEO, weren't you? And you just stopped and come back to reinvigorate what's been going all along, which was Croft Consulting.
For sure. And I had 4 very, very happy years working out back in Dubai between literally the beginning of COVID and around about three months ago. I find myself spending a disproportionate amount of my time doing things that didn't actually bring me lots of happiness. You know, sitting on business development calls, for example, trying desperately to win new business from people that I've never seen before, and also talking about stuff that I don't really understand. So, look, whilst fundamentally it was a fantastic 4 years, and I made some fantastic colleagues, and we still have excellent relationships, and no doubt I'll be back out there doing the things I do best for them as well. But ultimately, I've got control back of my own destiny.
And that lovely adage, control your destiny or others will control it for you. So you're now back in the saddle of what was yours to ride in any case, to use the equestrian analogy there, of Croft Consultancy, which is where you're back, reframing that with a new website that we'll talk about at the end as well.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks to everyone. So it's my great pleasure to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To show. As I've already mentioned, this is a special Brand Strand founder story. We're going to get into the who, the what, the where, the why you do what you do. And then crucially, we'll find out exactly where we can come and find you to continue to work with Croft Consultancy. So there's going to be a clearing a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. Hurrah! So it's all to play for, and watch and learn as we get you in through all those storytelling gates within 45 minutes.
My goodness.
That's cool. So, what I love about this construct is the fact that everybody interprets it differently. So first of all, the epicenter of the whole show is a clearing, which is your serious happy place. Where does John Philp, world-class, gold-plated glitterati facilitator, where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
That's a great question because, you know, again, it's a bit like saying, you know, what is your favourite record of all time? Ask me tomorrow and I might give you a different answer. But seriously, there are two... there are two places. There's the virtual place and there's the real place. The real place is very accessible. It's my garden. I walk out my front door and I'm lucky that we've got a bit of land around us. We've got a couple of hills at the bottom of the garden. So being in nature can be as simple as that when you're stuck and you're looking for inspiration, when you're needing to get a different concept going. Sometimes it just takes a walk around and breathing fresh air and understanding that there's more important things than yourself. So that's the real place that's very easy to go to. In my creative, irrational, illogical mind, if I want to get really interested about or starting to think differently and be creative, there's a little village called Livremont. And it's a place where my brother Gavin and I first visited back in 1979 on a camping holiday. And I have subsequently gone back many, many times with friends and family. And it's just a very special place. And when I'm there, I can smell the flowers and the environment. And it's just a wonderful place for creative thinking and feeling happy. So I can go there in my mind anytime and go to the garden when I'm at home.
Lovely. So we've got a choice now because you've given us two. You've over-delivered. So do you want to go to the campsite virtual space or do you want to go to the... Yes.
Yeah, let's do Libremont.
And I've already mentioned you've delivered training in a tent in the Iraqi desert. So this is a different tent. This is more of you and your brother camping type.
Right. That'll do, yeah.
I'm now going to arrive rather comically. In fact, congratulations, you're the first person in the circa 200 episodes that I've done that's actually said a tent. So there's all sorts of carry-on camping jokes to be had. But I'm going to try and comically now arrive with a tree in your tent. Oi, get out of my tent with your tree. But I'm going to shake your tree, a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit deliberately existentially. And now we're going to do a really juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, which I have to say I got from a wonderful fellow Scot of yours called Dave Stewart, if you're listening or watching, from Fresh Air Leadership. And 5-4-3-2-1 is 5 minutes, John, that you've had since you knew you're going to be doing this to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's where the, oh, squirrels are going to come from. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, John Philp from Croft Consulting, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So it's not a memory test. It's over to you now to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
4 things that have shaped me. It's fantastic. To quote my good friend Stan Slapp, I could spend a lifetime talking about the things that have shaped me. We don't have a lifetime. You've told us we've got about 45 minutes. Now, we could make the next 45 minutes be like a lifetime. Focus on what's really important. So let's focus on what's really important. A love of travel. Seriously, back in 1967, my dad retired from a career in the military and the police. And he bought himself a brand new Austin 1800. And me and my 3 siblings, six of us, were thrown into this car. And we did a massive road trip around Europe for 6 weeks, camping and just seeing different sights. And it was from that very early age that I got the bug for travel. And clearly that stayed with me. You know, as you quite rightly said in your introduction, you know, so far with family and friends, and I've traveled a considerable, but with work, I've actually delivered a development solution in 77 countries around the world. So, you know, I think that love of travel is definitely an element or a pillar that has shaped me, undoubtedly so.
And how old were you, just to go back in your timeline, when you were shoved in the back of that car for that Genesis trip?
Well, I'm the baby of the family. I was 5. So that was 1967. And if you get the arithmetic right, you can work out yesterday I was 62. My hearties.
P-birthday. Yeah. Quite literally to you. Wonderful. So I'm very happy we're talking to you the day after your birthday. And here we are. We survived to live another day. So that's a great first shapage. Next shapage?
Bob Dylan. From a relatively early age, probably around about 14, I've been kind of into Dylan, as they say. The record that got me probably interested was another brother, George Mack. He had bought the single Hurricane, and that was about the boxer Reuben Hurricane Carter, who was falsely tried and falsely convicted of a murder that he obviously didn't do. But it was a travesty against him simply because of the colour of his skin. And back in those days, it was a dangerous place to be in America if you were, you know, of colour. And clearly, he was a victim of that. And that, as a young 14-year-old, that got me inspired to think about justice, injustice, privilege, understanding that, you know, the world isn't fair necessarily. And from then, I sort of became really absorbed by Bob Dylan and his music. And I think up until about the mid-1980s, I managed to find a way of saying, I've bought every legal album that Bob Dylan has ever produced. And I think by that point, that was true. He's carried on producing lots and lots of albums. And quite frankly, I've fallen out of love with him because he now sounds more like somebody singing Bob Dylan, trying to be Bob Dylan, but very drunk in a bar. He's no, you know, and the purists will say, I'm missing out, but hey-ho. I do like the early Dylan stuff, and that's, you know, going back to, everybody knows Blowing in the Wind, or indeed Mr. Tambourine, Masters of War. And yes, these are all really fantastic, fantastic songs. And it's inspirational, you know, absolutely inspirational.
Have you ever seen Bob Dylan live in your time?
Seven times. So, yeah, so I saw him first in, I think, 1980 in Earl's Court. And the last time I saw him was in Glasgow. And, you know, the last time I vouched never to go back again. You know, he was just awful, you know, awful. However, I remember him in his good days. So
the halcyon days of a path of all of our lives is a very important sort of point to keep hold of, isn't it? So he's very much part of your halcyon days.
Absolutely. I've still got something like 78 Bob Dylan albums. Many of them are the bootlegs, so you've never seen them on the shops. And I have been told that, you know, I've actually got an original first press covering of the very first Dylan album, simply called Bob Dylan. And I think I was offered several hundred, probably a couple of thousand now it's worth. So, you know, one day, you know, when everything falls apart around me, I've always got that to sell, Chris.
Lovely. That's a delicious shapeage. Thank you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Shapeage number three, please.
The global pandemic. Who would have believed back in January 2020 what was about to happen? You know, I cannot believe when you look back how things have changed, or how things changed so quickly. Interestingly enough, you know, I was delivering, when we say January, it was really March, wasn't it? I was working with a good mutual friends, the Oxford Group, but back in sort of January, February, delivering some great work for them in Sweden. And you know, I came back from that, and then I went from there directly down to Rwanda, and I was working with one of the big Nigerian oil companies. But they had a delegation down in Rwanda, and I remember vividly feeling miserable, you know, coughing and spluttering, and thinking, I've got a bad cold here. And thank God, looking back, you know, we all thought it could be the bit of COVID, but it wasn't. But I was sort of brought into a sort of secure unit at our local hospital, and and given all sorts of tests, but that was fine. But the reality, of course, Chris, was that, you know, that the world closed down. And in our business, certainly face-to-face training closed down. And the really clever and really efficient organizations, and I'll give credit to some of my colleagues. There's a company called Cybell. Cybell are a wonderful organization. I've been associated with Cybell for many years. And Carol Stevenson runs that business. And she was one of the first people I knew that really grasped this as an opportunity. And she did it in a way that I didn't. I was about probably 2 or 3 months behind her. But unless you were quick to respond to that change, it was a big challenge. And it hurt us badly. Yeah, it did hurt us badly. So the global pandemic has shaped me. It's made me more resilient. And, you know, it's been tough, but educational.
And mentioning that wonderful word resilience there, I know you've had your resilience tested. There is a darker side to one of your trips that you may or may not go into, I know, but it was an incident that happened to you in Nigeria. We could just put that in there, in a float in the water, where people can actually get in touch to find out more if you don't go there. Wonderful. Fourth shapeage?
Knowing the influence that you have over others. And again, you know, I'm going to draw references to my good friend and colleague Stan Slapp. You know, one of the programs, or one should I say, one of the solutions that he has created is a book in the title Under the Hood. Now, Under the Hood is a book that looks exclusively at employee culture and how we can actually improve our employee cultures. But there's a part of the book and there's a part of that solution that talks about this, and it's about the personal impact that you have. Now, without, you know, in the privacy of your own mind and anybody that's listening, you can get this. Who was the one person in your life? It's not a question for you, Chris, so at ease. But if you think about this, who is the one person in your life that has had the most positive impact on you? And what was it that made that person so positively impactful? Think, process. We all know somebody. And secondly, conversely, who is the one person that had the most negative, damning impact on your life? And we all know one person. And the lesson that comes out of that Under the Hood solution is simply this, that as long as you have had the experience of dealing with somebody who's had a good impression and somebody who's had a bad impression, that is the reality. And guess what? You could be either of those characters to the people that you lead and the people that you influence. And I know who I want to be more like. I want to be that impactful, positive person.
Beautifully put. Absolutely. A lovely teaser question with real seismic depth to it. Fantastic. And it's very relatable, the under the hood versus what lies under the bonnet of all good interactions. Lovely. And now we've done the four things that have shaped you. Now three things that inspire you.
I've got something very personal, and you've mentioned the fact that you are a proud parent. Well, you didn't actually say you were proud. I'm just assuming you're a proud parent, which parents are not proud of their children. So I've got two kids, and I say they're kids. Rona, she's 31, Callum's 28. And they are completely and utterly wonderful human beings, and they are, they were with us at the weekend, and I can't get enough of them, and they do make me realise this is a whole. I've watched The Lion King. I've seen the whole Great Circle of Life thing. This is why we're here, you know. But there's a story I want to share with you because it has some relevance to what you've been talking about recently on social media. The great Albert Marhabian, yeah, and his concept about how we communicate face to face, and spoiler alert. The statistics would tell us that 55% of the impact of the message comes through our body language, 38% through the tone of voice, and a mere 7% through the words that we choose to use. Well, Chris, the first time I heard this theory or concept, I was sceptical, and I was sceptical for a long time afterwards, until I had the experience back in about 2000, and we're camping. You're getting a picture here. I enjoy camping. And we're camping in the south of France. And at that time, my kids were about 6, 7. And we arrived in this campsite and we pitched our tent and everything was beautiful. You know, the weather, everything was just fantastic. And the kids saw about 50 meters away, a play park. And in the play park, they said, "Dad, can we go? Can we go?" And I said, "Yes, go on, have fun, play." Now, my wife and I, being slightly responsible parents, we kind of kept an eye on them. And they were in the park, and within a very short period of time, they started interacting with other children. They're happy, we're happy. The girls were swinging on swings, and the boys were kicking a ball. Fantastic. It's now officially Pino Grigio o'clock or something. So we're relaxing. About 25, 30 minutes later, the kids come running back. And my son, I think Callum was about 6 or 7 at the time, he's like, yeah, get some food and some. And I said to him, Cal, are you having fun? He said, oh, Dad, it's great. This is the best holiday I've ever had. He's not, but that's cool. And then I said, I said, I see you've made friends. He said, oh, yes. He said, they're my best friends now ever. I said, oh, my, what's their names? Which he said, the boys called him, and his little face, Jean-Michel. It's a girl's name, but he is a boy. And he said, he's got a sister like me, and her name's Claudette. And I said, ah, Jean-Michel and Claudette, they're French. He said, yes, Dad, the French were in France. And I thought, oh, God, attitude. Anyway, quickly, he said, I said, they must speak good English. To which Callum said, I'm coming back to Marhabian. Wait. Callum said, no, Dad, they don't speak any English. They're French. They don't understand a word we say. And I said, well, that's interesting because you can't speak any French. And to which he looked at me straight in the eye and said, it's okay. We have not told them that we can't speak French. And it was that moment of realization that they had 55% of body language, the 38% of tone. They had no requirement for a formal language. And those kids formed a little gang, and they played beautifully together. And I think they ended up with a bit of a franglaise, a hybrid between the two languages. But it was a fantastic holiday, and that's what reinforced the Marhabian rule to me.
And what a beautiful language, the language of play, which in my theatre background as well and comedy improvisation stuff, that's very, very beautiful and relatable. And now a second thing that inspires you?
This is a bit more generic, but resilience of individuals. I have travelled a lot. I've been in very difficult places in the world. I was stuck in Kuwait at the second Gulf War for about 4 weeks. I went out for a four-day workshop and got caught up with Tony Blair and Mr. Bush Jr. Bombing Iraq next door. And so I was stuck. I was one of only two civilians in a hotel, and we're getting bombed by Iraq. And yet everybody was fantastic. There was people, the cleaners still turned up to clean the rooms. People still turned up to serve us dinner. It was a fantastic. And then, that's quite extreme. But, we've had the privilege of going to places where they don't necessarily have the same level of comfort that we do. And yet we complain about silly things. It's just irrelevant stuff. And I work with people that are just so, so much more resilient. And I really appreciate that. The tenacity, the resilience of individuals in the face of adversity. Fantastic.
These are lovely answers, by the way. You're giving me gold by the bucket load already. And a third shapeage? Think that inspires you.
Well, yeah, it's probably cultural diversity. And again, it sounds like an easy one to say because, being around. But, we talk about freedom and we talk about equality and all of that good stuff. But, sometimes you've got to just live in another person's environment to really appreciate that. I remember, for example, being in Kuwait and somebody who was a local Kuwaiti saying to me, look, you guys in the West think you can export democracy like it's some sort of commodity. We have a different way here. In Kuwait, we have voting and we have some level of democracy. But in actual fact, we have a different type of democracy, and it's much different. And I guess that kind of, if you live in a country such as the UK or Western Europe or indeed North America, we tend to think of our way being the best way. And it is for us, but it's not necessarily right for everybody else. And I think we need to appreciate that. So cultural diversity is important. And understanding that being inclusive is a privilege that we actually have here in Western society.
I'm really enjoying there's a deep reservoir of empathy in everything you're describing, which is really, really enjoyable to listen to. And now we're on to two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up Ball Squirrels. What never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you?
Fantastic. Listen, can I just say, I've never seen the film Up. Don't know what you're talking about. But in terms
it's
of...
It's just a dog that goes, oh, squirrels. So,
I still don't know what you're talking about, Chris.
So your homework is go and watch the film Up. You're also quite at the beginning. There's the most beautiful establishing montage in the film Up. It's a film of deep beauty.
Lovely, lovely. I promise I will watch it and give you a report back. Two things that never fail to grab my attention. I have this insatiable sense of adventure. You know, if somebody said to me, look, John, you can there's a place for you on the International Space Station. You can go there. You're going to have to go for 3 months or 6 weeks or at least, you know, and get involved in doing some experiments. And I would be there in a heartbeat. I would be absolutely up for that in a heartbeat. And my logical head says, no, that's never going to happen. You know, I know that's never going to happen. But emotionally, I sometimes think, wouldn't that be wonderful if I just got that call? Would you like to be the first old guy with no training, a bit overweight, likes his Lafroy whiskey too much to go up there for six? I'd be there. I'd be there in a heartbeat.
I hope you get a direct message ping within your LinkedIn box from NASA going, we've been looking for you all our lives. There you are.
Please do. Please do. The other thing that never fails to distract me in my ever hectic life is this sense of loyalty. And this is an interesting thing. It's a very serious thing. You know, I value loyalty more than most other things. In terms of loyalty to colleagues, loyalty to friends, you can be pursuing a dream, you can be pursuing a vision, you can be pursuing a shared goal, but it doesn't come easily. And everything that we have achieved in our careers has come through not just our own endeavours, but through the support and commitment from the people who we care about and who care about us. And I think we should really be careful that we don't ever take that for granted. Our friends are important, and our colleagues, the people that we care about, are important. And when there's a blip, you know, when there's a hiccup or when there's a miscommunication, and what was strong becomes weak, or what was, you know, what was perceived to be great becomes irrelevant, you know, that's pretty sad. Blowing my own trumpet, I'm probably one of the most loyal friends you could have.
I love that, and you really got to see the film Up, because I think the dog is quite loyal too. So you're a loyal, lovely, lovely creature, Mr. John.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now, and by the way, that was a lovely answer. And now, a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you, John Philp, until you tell us.
I don't know if David Thomas, my good friend, who happens to be a world Guinness record building champion, his memory is elephantine. He's got the memory. I mean, honestly, he's been on the Oprah Winfrey Show. He can remember a pack of cards and recite them back to you. He can recite pi to about 55 billion. You know, he's got a brilliant memory. But the point there was, he's a Guinness World Record holder. I've never told you this, but so am I. On the 9th of May 1983, I was part of a pub. There's always alcohol involved somewhere. we were involved in trying to raise money at charity Muscular Dystrophy. And Gary Wallace, the bar manager at the time, was trying to get a team together to do something good, like, you know, run a marathon. Well, you know, I don't do marathons, but I can drink tea. And Simon Bates was at that point a Radio 1 DJ, and he'd just, a couple of weeks prior to that, had this guy on doing a world tea drinking record. And in 9.5 hours, this guy, in 10 hours, I beg your pardon, this guy got 74 10 fluid ounce cups of tea down him. And I just thought, how difficult can that be? So I contacted Guinness Superlatives. It's all set up. I went over to the Radio 4 studios in Edinburgh on the 9th of May, 1983. And in 9 hours and 40 minutes, I drank 78 10-ounce cups of tea, which put me ahead of the guy. It was entered into that year, and it was taken out every subsequent year because it was deemed to be dangerous, and they didn't want to encourage people to...
And what were the consequences of setting that record? Did you just, if you don't mind me, if you'll pardon this expression, did you not just wee for the next 5 weeks?
I had 23 recorded visits to the little boys' room, and I know there were 23 because I had to take a guy with me from the Guinness Superlatives to make sure I wasn't being sick. That would have null and voided it. And the bigger consequence was I was driven home completely intoxicated, and a medical friend of mine said to me at the time, "You don't need alcohol to be intoxicated. You just need fluid intoxication." And I was off my head. And the first thing my dear mother said to me when I got in, she said, "Sit down, I'll make you a nice wee cup of tea." And it was the last thing that was on my mind, believe me, Chris.
And of course, the comedian in me is going to tea etiquette when you're accompanied to the loos by the Guinness World Record. You hold, I'll pour. Only kidding.
Believe me, I'm normally quite shy under those circumstances. Shyness is thrown out the window, really. Yeah.
And you, I know you can drink tea, but also I know that you can. You do enjoy a dram as well, shall we say, because in our Oxford Group days, I was thinking, oh, hello, you're able to, yes, have a drink, shall we say. Which is
cool. I don't think that's anything to be proud of. But this is Arthur Good Water.
Arthur Good Water. I love that. We have shaken your tree, John Phil. Hurrah. And now we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree, and now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. Mm-hmm. When you're at purpose and in flow, and this is where you can go deep as you like into Croft Consultancy as well if you like, but what are you absolutely happiest doing in terms of your purpose and what you're here to reveal to the world?
I guess, it will come as no surprise that I'm happiest, metaphorically and physically being on stage. When I'm running a masterclass, when I'm running a program, a course, when I'm involved in facilitating good conversation, when people are starting to learn through experience and learn through sharing their wisdom and their experiences, it gives me a huge amount of pride, and it gives me a huge amount of hope that there is humanity is savable. So I'm happiest definitely when I'm back in the room. I'm happiest doing great work, So for example, last week I was down in Portugal with Stan Slatt. Stan was doing a 40-minute keynote for the HR Congress World Summit. So we had some of the greatest HR minds in the on planet Earth gathered in this room. And just to be walking around and talking and networking about you know, human resource development, providing the opportunity for people to be the best versions of themselves that they can be, was just such a pleasure. And it was such a pleasure because people were there, not because they were told they had to be there, but because they wanted to be there. And I guess, you know, that keynote went down a storm, and then it became a point of discussion. So I guess that really helps me be in a very happy place. And I think currently, and I think that this is the really interesting, but the current right now, it's quite amazing. I don't know if I've tried to disallow this, but like most people now, we've got multiple screens in our room, and I keep seeing myself over here. Maybe I should be looking, I don't know. Lovely to see you. But I'm currently working with a very, very lovely client, Explio. The Explio Group are a global multi-billion-dollar technical corporation. And it's actually a company in former guises I've been involved with for about 14 years. They're heavily involved in engineering, technology, management, consultancy. Stuff that is really, seriously, beyond my understanding when it comes to understanding the technical aspects of what they deliver in terms of solutions. But on a global level, and they are operating in 34 countries around the world, I'm setting up with them, helping to set up a leadership and management development arm service to their already well-established academy. The Explio Academy provides the technical training, the stuff that, you know, software program engineers, etc. As I say, the stuff that, you know, I have to get my you know, I don't understand, I'm not pretend that I do. What they have identified is that for every technical organization that has technically really, really sort of left-brain people, left-brain logical thinkers, they tend to be also people who manage people. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is we're giving them the tools, and we've now created a faculty where there's over 60 solutions already under five different pillars. So we're getting that underway, and there's going to be a big PR announcement in the next couple of weeks, and it's going really, really well. So that's my happy place right now, very, very happy.
It's a very enigmatic rustling under a tarpaulin that you're doing with a big reveal about to happen. So that comes full circle back to your tent. We're rustling a tarpaulin about to do the big reveal.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, but rustling under a tarpaulin, just be careful. People can start talking.
Exactly. Wonderful. And now I'm going to award you with a cake, Mr. John Philp. So now this is the last storytelling suffused metaphor where you're going to get to put a cherry on the cake with stuff like, first of all, what's a favourite inspirational quote, John, that's always given you sucker and pulled you towards your future?
I've got two, and they come from one song. And Chris, you probably know this. I say it's a song. It's a kind of more of a monologue. You must have heard. And if you haven't, just say so. The Baz Luhrmann, the sunscreen song.
No, I haven't.
Oh. Right. Well, you'll have to just Google that when we get off this. Back in, I think it was 1999, this came out. I was driving up the M6, and the DJ said, if you're doing anything just now, turn the radio up and listen to this. Anyway, so I'm going to give you two quotes from this. Baz Luhrmann's Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Now, that's a beautiful quote because both my mum and dad, I had lost them. They died before I was 25. So, you know, and I've got friends today. I've got really my very, very, very closest, best friend, James, has still got his parents, and they're in their 90s. And he appreciates them. And that's beautiful. But so many people I know just take their mum and dad for granted. And, you know, I would love to be given 2 minutes just to go back and see, tell me about there's 1,000 questions I would love. So get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Quote number one. And quote number two, same song. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. In this day and age of social media where everybody's wanting to be famous for 15 minutes or even longer, and they're getting the cosmetic, whatever's going on there, you know, there is real beauty, and it saddens me when I see some really beautiful young people of both genders doing things to themselves. But you know what? I'm just a grumpy old man, maybe. But don't try to live up to other people's expectations of you. Be yourself and be completely comfortable in your own skin. And certainly do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly.
Lovely quotes. And now, with the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of you, John Philp?
Well, again, keep a diary, keep a journal. I wish I had. Make an entry into every day, even if that entry is just nothing happened today. Because quite frankly, there's never a day goes by where nothing happens. There's never a dull day. So even if it's a couple of lines, keep a diary. Don't stress about your life. Don't worry about the future. Because, that will happen. Take good decisions when you can, but don't worry about the future. A lot of people are saying, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know, which university, what's your degree? Nonsense. I'm 62. And seriously, Chris, it's not just for a cheap laugh. Seriously, I sometimes think to myself, I haven't yet figured out what I'm going to do when I grow up. Really. And finally, I would tell my younger self, invest in Apple.
Lovely. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Advice is a form of nostalgia. And be careful whose advice you buy, because it's just somebody else's recycled truth. And find your own way forward in life.
And now we're ramping up to, in a short moment, Shakespeare to talk about legacy. Just before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. And I'd like to invite you to keep the golden thread of the storytelling alive by passing on the golden baton to somebody else in your network who you think would appreciate being given a damn good listening to in this way.
Look, he might not thank me for this, but I'm gonna say this in any case. A guy who is, in my humble opinion, one of the greatest storytellers that we have on the circuit of international speakers, and that is the one and only Stan Slapp. So I'm going to offer Stan the opportunity to accept your golden baton.
A privilege and a joy. Thank you so much. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's esteemed and all the bit of women merely players, we're now going to dig into the seven ages of man construct to talk about legacy and how, when all is said and done, John Philp, you would most like to be remembered.
Well, I'm going to live forever, but of course that's not true. It kind of brings me back to Alfred Nobel, and you possibly know this, Chris, but what is Alfred Nobel really famous for?
A prize giving?
Exactly. There's five or six categories, science and literature and peace and all of that. But that's not what he was really famous for. Now, back in 1889, there was Alfred Nobel having his cornflakes, reading the Times or whatever it was over his breakfast. And he had the fortune to read his own obituary. And the obituary, and Alfred Nobel's obituary, the headline was, Alfred Nobel, Merchant of Death, is dead. Now, it then went on to confirm that Alfred Nobel was the inventor of TNT, dynamite. And the article talked about the amount of death and the amount of destruction and the amount of heartache that was used during wars and such like. And that was the wake-up call that Nobel actually needed. And that is when he then set up the Nobel Foundation for prize giving. So with that in mind, I think it's important to understand that we do have a legacy. And I didn't write a lot down, but I did write this one down because I think it's important just to quote it rather than just, paraphrase it. So personally, I hope to be remembered as the guy that knew how to throw a great party, who brought great people together and had a load of fun.
Lovely. Thank you so much. And where can we find out all about John Philp on the old interweb?
Okay, croftconsultancy.com, C-R-O-F-T, consultancy, croftconsultancy.com. Also, that's all one word, by the way. And also, the expleoacademy.com, you'll find us there. We're going to be launching some very interesting solutions there in the next couple of weeks. But definitely, and also just link in with me.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, Brand Strand, Founder Story, is there anything else you'd like to say, John Philp?
Thank you, Chris, very much for this opportunity. You've made it painless and easy. You're such a gentleman, and you're an easy guy to talk to, so thank you for that. If you're, and here's my last point, if you're an accomplished leadership trainer, facilitator, coach, and you're wanting and interested to develop new opportunities, and you don't mind working in great places like Ireland and the UK and perhaps the Middle East, contact me through LinkedIn, drop me an email, and let's talk.
What a wonderful invitation. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. You've been listening to the, well, the facilitating glitterati legend that is Mr. John Philp. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. Check out the website at thegoodlistening2show.com. And yes, we get into the who, the what, the where, the why, the how, the, and where we can find out to come and work with you. So ladies and gin, min, I've been Chris Grimes. That's been John Philp. Good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.